Marlowe had left his great-grandfather to face the hot, barren desert. The warden had left Stanley to face Mr. Sir. Somehow, his great-grandfather had survived for 17 days before he was rescued by a couple of rattlesnake hunters. He was insane when they found him. When he was asked how he had lived so long, he said he found refuge on God's thumb. He spent nearly a month in a hospital. He ended up marrying one of the nurses. Nobody ever knew what he meant by God's thumb, including himself. Stanley heard a twitching sound. He stopped in mid-step, with one foot still in the air. A rattlesnake lay coiled beneath his foot. Its tail was pointed upward, rattling. Stanley backed his leg away, then turned and ran. The rattlesnake didn't chase after him. It had rattled its tail to warn him to stay away. "Thanks for the warning," Stanley whispered as his heart pounded. The rattlesnake would be a lot more dangerous if it didn't have a rattle.
"Hey, caveman," called Armpit. "You're still alive."
"What'd the warden say?" asked X-Ray.
"What'd you tell her?" asked Magnet.
"I told her I stole the seeds," said Stanley.
"Good going," said Magnet.
"What'd she do?"
asked Zigzag. Stanley shrugged one shoulder.
"Nothing.
She got mad at Mr. Sir for bothering her." He didn't feel like going into details. If he didn't talk about it, then maybe it didn't happen. He went over to his hole, and to his surprise, it was nearly finished. He stared at it, amazed. It didn't make sense. Or perhaps it did. He smiled. Since he had taken the blame for the sunflower seeds, he realized, the other boys had dug his hole for him.
"Hey, thanks," he said.
"Don't look at me," said X-Ray.
Confused, Stanley looked around. From Magnet, to Armpit, to Zigzag, to Squid. None of them took credit for it. Then he turned to Zero, who had been quietly digging in his hole since Stanley's return. Zero's hole was smaller than all the others.
Chapter 22. Stanley was the first one finished. He spat in his hole, then showered and changed into his cleaner set of clothes. It had been 3 days since the laundry was done, so even his clean set was dirty and smelly. Tomorrow, these would become his work clothes, and his other set would be washed. He could think of no reason why Zero would dig his hole for him. Zero didn't even get any sunflower seeds.
"I guess he likes to dig holes," Armpit had said.
"He's a mole," Zigzag had said. "I think he eats dirt."
"Moles don't eat dirt," X-Ray had pointed out.
"Worms eat dirt." "Hey, Zero," Squid had asked. "Are you a mole or a worm?"
Zero had said nothing. Stanley never even thanked him, but now he sat on his cot and waited for Zero to return from the shower room.
"Thanks,"
he said as Zero entered through the tent flap. Zero glanced at him, then went over to the crates, where he deposited his dirty clothes and towel.
"Why'd you help me?" Stanley asked.
Zero turned around.
"You didn't steal the sunflower seeds," he said.
"So, neither did you," said Stanley. Zero stared at him. His eyes seemed to expand, and it was almost as if Zero were looking right through him.
"You didn't steal the sneakers," he said.
Stanley said nothing. He watched Zero walk out of the tent. If anybody had X-ray vision, it was Zero.
"Wait,"
he called, then hurried out after him. Zero had stopped just outside the tent, and Stanley almost ran into him.
"I'll try to teach you to read, if you want," Stanley offered. "I don't know if I know how to teach, but I'm not that worn out today, since you dug a lot of my hole."
A big smile spread across Zero's face. They returned to the tent, where they were less likely to be bothered. Stanley got his box of stationery and a pen out of his crate. They sat on the ground.
"Do you know the alphabet?" Stanley asked.
For a second, he thought he saw a flash of defiance in Zero's eyes, but then it passed.
"I think I know some of it," Zero said. "A, B, C, D..."
"Keep going," said Stanley.
Zero's eyes looked upward.
"E,
F," said Stanley.
"G,"
said Zero. He blew some air out of the side of his mouth.
"H, I, K, P..."
"H-I-J-K-L," Stanley said.
"That's right," said Zero. "I've heard it before. I just don't have it memorized exactly."
"That's all right," said Stanley. "Here, I'll say the whole thing, just to kind of refresh your memory. Then you can try it."
He recited the alphabet for Zero. Then Zero repeated it without a single mistake. Not bad for a kid who had never seen Sesame Street.
"Well, I've heard it before. Somewhere," Zero said,
trying to act like it was nothing. But his big smile gave him away. The next step was harder. Stanley had to figure out how to teach him to recognize each letter. He gave Zero a piece of paper and took a piece for himself.
I guess we'll start with A.
He printed a capital A, and then Zero copied it on his sheet of paper. The paper wasn't lined, which made it more difficult, but Zero's A wasn't bad, just a little big. Stanley told him he needed to write smaller, or else they'd run out of paper real quick. Zero printed it smaller.
Actually, there are two ways to write each letter, Stanley said, as he realized this was going to be even harder than he thought. That's a capital A, but usually you'll see a small a. You only have capitals at the beginning of a word, and only if it's the start of a sentence, or if it's a proper noun, like a name.
Zero nodded as if he understood, but Stanley knew he had made very little sense. He printed a lowercase a, and Zero copied it.
So there are 52, said Zero.
Stanley didn't know what he was talking about.
Instead of 26 letters, there are really 52.
Stanley looked at him, surprised.
I guess that's right.
How'd you figure that out? He asked. Zero said nothing.
Did you add?
Zero said nothing.
Did you multiply?
That's just how many there are, said Zero.
Stanley raised and lowered one shoulder. He didn't even know how Zero knew there were 26 in the first place. Did he count them as he recited them? He had Zero write a few more upper and lowercase A's, and then he moved on to a capital B. This was going to take a long time, he realized.
You can teach me 10 letters a day, suggested Zero. 5 capitals and 5 smalls. After 5 days, I'll know them all. Except on the last day, I'll have to do 12, 6 capitals and 6 smalls.
Again, Stanley stared at him, amazed that he was able to figure all that out.
Zero must have thought he was staring for a different reason, because he said,
I'll dig part of your hole every day. I can dig for about an hour, then you can teach me for an hour, and since I'm a faster digger anyway, our holes will get done about the same time. I won't have to wait for you.
Okay, Stanley agreed.
As Zero was printing his B's, Stanley asked him how he figured out it would take 5 days.
Did you multiply? Did you divide?
That's just what it is, Zero said.
It's good math, said Stanley.
I'm not stupid, Zero said. I know everybody thinks I am. I just don't like answering their questions.
Later that night, as he lay on his cot, Stanley reconsidered the deal he had made with Zero. Getting a break every day would be a relief, but he knew X-Ray wouldn't like it. He wondered if there might be some way Zero would agree to dig part of X-Ray's hole as well. But then again, why should he?
I'm the one teaching Zero. I need the break, so I'll have the energy to teach him. I'm the one who took the blame for the sunflower seeds. I'm the one who Mr. Sir is mad at.
He closed his eyes and images from the warden's cabin floated inside his head. Her red fingernails, Mr. Sir writhing on the floor, her flowered makeup kit. He opened his eyes.
He suddenly realized where he'd seen the gold tube before. He'd seen it in his mother's bathroom, and he'd seen it again in the warden's cabin. It was half of a lipstick container.
KB. KB. He felt the jolt of astonishment. His mouth silently formed the name Kate Barlow, as he wondered if it really could have belonged to the Kissin' Outlaw.
Chapter 23. 110 years ago, Green Lake was the largest lake in Texas. It was full of clear, cool water, and it sparkled like a giant emerald in the sun. It was especially beautiful in the spring, when the peach trees, which lined the shore, bloomed with pink and rose-colored blossoms. There was always a town picnic on the 4th of July. They'd play games, dance, sing, and swim in the lake to keep cool. Prizes were awarded for the best peach pie and peach jam. A special prize was given every year to Miss Catherine Barlow for her fabulous spiced peaches. No one else even tried to make spiced peaches, because they knew none could be as delicious as hers. Every summer, Miss Catherine would pick bushels of peaches and preserve them in jars with cinnamon, cloves, nutmeg, and other spices which she kept secret. The jarred peaches would last all winter. They probably would have lasted a lot longer than that, but they were always eaten by the end of winter. It was said that Green Lake was heaven on earth, and that Miss Catherine's spiced peaches were food for the angels. Catherine Barlow was the town's only schoolteacher. She taught in an old one-room schoolhouse. It was old even then. The roof leaked, the windows wouldn't open, the door hung crooked on its bent hinges. She was a wonderful teacher, full of knowledge and full of life. The children loved her. She taught classes in the evening for adults, and many of the adults loved her as well. She was very pretty. Her classes were often full of young men who were a lot more interested in the teacher than they were in getting an education. But all they ever got was an education.
One such young man was Trout Walker. His real name was Charles Walker, but everyone called him Trout because his 2 feet smelled like a couple of dead fish. This wasn't entirely Trout's fault. He had an incurable foot fungus. In fact, it was the same foot fungus that 110 years later would afflict the famous ball player Clyde Livingston. But at least Clyde Livingston showered every day.
"I take a bath every Sunday morning," Trout would brag, "whether I need to or not."
Most everyone in the town of Green Lake expected Miss Catherine to marry Trout Walker. He was the son of the richest man in the county. His family owned most of the peach trees and all the land on the east side of the lake. Trout often showed up at night school, but never paid attention. He talked in class and was disrespectful of the students around him. He was loud and stupid. A lot of men in town were not educated. That didn't bother Miss Catherine. She knew they'd spent most of their lives working on farms and ranches and hadn't had much schooling. That was why she was there, to teach them. But Trout didn't want to learn. He seemed to be proud of his stupidity. "How'd you like to take a ride on my new boat this Saturday?" he asked her one evening after class.
"No, thank you," said Miss Catherine.
"We've got a brand new boat," he said. "You don't even have to row it."
"Yes, I know," said Miss Catherine.
Everyone in town had seen, and heard, the Walker's new boat. It made a horrible, loud noise and spewed ugly black smoke over the beautiful lake. Trout had always gotten everything he ever wanted. He found it hard to believe that Miss Catherine had turned him down. He pointed his finger at her and said,
"No one ever says no to Charles Walker."
"I believe I just did," said Catherine Barlow.
Chapter 24. Stanley was half asleep as he got in line for breakfast, but the sight of Mr. Sir awakened him. The left side of Mr. Sir's face had swollen to the size of half a cantaloupe. There were 3 dark purple, jagged lines running down his cheek where the warden had scratched him. The other boys in Stanley's tent had obviously seen Mr. Sir as well, but they had the good sense not to say anything. Stanley put a carton of juice and a plastic spoon on his tray. He kept his eyes down and hardly breathed as Mr. Sir ladled some oatmeal-like stuff into his bowl. He brought his tray to the table. Behind him, a boy from one of the other tents said, "Hey, what happened to your face?"
There was a crash.
Stanley turned to see Mr. Sir holding the boy's head against the oatmeal pot.
"Is something wrong with my face?"
The boy tried to speak but couldn't. Mr. Sir had him by the throat.
"Does anyone see anything wrong with my face?"
asked Mr. Sir as he continued to choke the boy.
Nobody said anything.
Mr. Sir let the boy go. His head banged against the table as he fell to the ground. Mr. Sir stood over him and asked,
"How does my face look to you now?"
A gurgling sound came out of the boy's mouth. Then he managed to gasp the word,
"Fine."
"I'm kind of handsome, don't you think?"
"Yes, Mr. Sir."
Out on the lake, the other boys asked Stanley what he knew about Mr. Sir's face, but he just shrugged and dug his hole. If he didn't talk about it, maybe it would go away. He worked as hard and as fast as he could, not trying to pace himself. He just wanted to get off the lake and away from Mr. Sir as soon as possible. Besides, he knew he'd get a break.
"Whenever you're ready, just let me know," Zero had said.
The first time the water truck came, it was driven by Mr. Pendansky. The second time, Mr. Sir was driving. No one said anything except, "Thank you, Mr. Sir," as he filled each canteen. No one even dared to look at his grotesque face. As Stanley waited, he ran his tongue over the roof of his mouth and inside his cheeks. His mouth was as dry and as parched as the lake. The bright sun reflected off the side mirror of the truck, and Stanley had to shield his eyes with his hand.
"Thank you, Mr. Sir,"
said Magnet as he took his canteen from him.
"You thirsty, caveman?" Mr. Sir asked.
"Yes, Mr. Sir,"
Stanley said, handing his canteen to him. Mr. Sir opened the nozzle, and the water flowed out of the tank, but it did not go into Stanley's canteen. Instead, he held the canteen right next to the stream of water. Stanley watched the water splatter on the dirt, where it was quickly absorbed by the thirsty ground. Mr. Sir let the water run for about 30 seconds, then stopped.
"You want more?" he asked.
Stanley didn't say anything. Mr. Sir turned the water back on, and again Stanley watched it pour onto the dirt.
"There, that should be plenty."
He handed Stanley his empty canteen. Stanley stared at the dark spot on the ground, which quickly shrank before his eyes.
"Thank you, Mr. Sir," he said.
Chapter 25. There was a doctor in the town of Green Lake 110 years ago. His name was Dr. Hawthorne, and whenever people got sick,
they would go see Doc Hawthorne. But they would also see Sam, the onion man.
"Onions? Sweet, fresh onions," Sam would call,
as he and his donkey Mary Lou walked up and down the dirt roads of Green Lake. Mary Lou pulled a cart full of onions. Sam's onion field was somewhere on the other side of the lake. Once or twice a week, he would row across the lake and pick a new batch to fill the cart. Sam had big, strong arms, but it would still take all day for him to row across the lake, and another day for him to return. Most of the time, he would leave Mary Lou in a shed, which the walkers let him use at no charge, but sometimes he would take Mary Lou on his boat with him. Sam claimed that Mary Lou was almost 50 years old, which was, and still is, extraordinarily old for a donkey.
"She eats nothing but raw onions," Sam would say,
holding up a white onion between his dark fingers.
"It's nature's magic vegetable. If a person ate nothing but raw onions, he could live to be 200 years old."
Sam was not much older than 20, so nobody was quite sure that Mary Lou was really as old as he said she was. How would he know? Still, nobody ever argued with Sam, and whenever they were sick, they would go not only to Doc Hawthorne, but also to Sam. Sam always gave the same advice.
"Eat plenty of onions."
He said that onions were good for the digestion, the liver, the stomach, the lungs, the heart, and the brain.
"If you don't believe me, just look at old Mary Lou here. She's never been sick a day in her life."
He also had many different ointments, lotions, syrups, and pastes, all made out of onion juice and different parts of the onion plant. This one cured asthma, that one was for warts and pimples, another was a remedy for arthritis. He even had a special ointment, which he claimed would cure baldness.
"Just rub it on your husband's head every night when he's sleeping, Mrs. Collingwood, and soon his hair will be thick and as long as Mary Lou's tail."
Doc Hawthorne did not resent Sam. The folks of Green Lake were afraid to take chances. They would get regular medicine from Doc Hawthorne and onion concoctions from Sam. After they got over their illness, no one could be sure, not even Doc Hawthorne, which of the two treatments had done the trick. Doc Hawthorne was almost completely bald, and in the morning, his head often smelled like onions. Whenever Catherine Barlow bought onions, she always bought an extra one or two and would let Mary Lou eat them out of her hand.
"Is something wrong?" Sam asked her one day as she was feeding Mary Lou. "You seem distracted."
"Oh, just the weather," said Miss Catherine. "It looks like rain clouds moving in."
"Me and Mary Lou, we like the rain," said Sam.
"Oh, I like it fine," said Miss Catherine as she rubbed the donkey's rough hair on top of its head. "It's just that the roof leaks in the schoolhouse."
"I can fix that," said Sam.
"Well, what are you going to do?" Catherine joked. "Fill the holes with onion paste?" Sam laughed.
"I'm good with my hands," he told her. "I built my own boat. If it leaked, I'd be in big trouble."
Catherine couldn't help but notice his strong, firm hands. They made a deal. He agreed to fix the leaky roof in exchange for 6 jars of spiced peaches. It took Sam a week to fix the roof, because he could only work in the afternoons, after school let out, and before night classes began. Sam wasn't allowed to attend classes because he was a Negro, but they let him fix the building. Miss Catherine usually stayed in the schoolhouse grading papers and such, while Sam worked on the roof. She enjoyed what little conversation they were able to have, shouting up and down to each other. She was surprised by his interest in poetry. When he took a break, she would sometimes read a poem to him. On more than one occasion, she would start to read a poem by Poe or Longfellow, only to hear him finish it for her, from memory. She was sad when the roof was finished.
"Is something wrong?" he asked.
"No, you did a wonderful job," she said. "It's just that the windows won't open. The children and I would enjoy a breeze now and then."
"I can fix that," said Sam.
She gave him 2 more jars of peaches, and Sam fixed the windows. It was easier to talk to him when he was working on the windows. He told her about his secret onion field on the other side of the lake,
where the onions grow all year round, and the water runs uphill.
When the windows were fixed, she complained that her desk wobbled.
"I can fix that," said Sam.
The next time she saw him, she mentioned that the door doesn't hang straight, and she got to spend another afternoon with him while he fixed the door. By the end of the first semester, Onion Sam had turned the old rundown schoolhouse into a well-crafted, freshly painted jewel of a building that the whole town was proud of. People passing by would stop and admire it.
"That's our schoolhouse. It shows how much we value education here in Green Lake."
The only person who wasn't happy with it was Miss Catherine. She'd run out of things needing to be fixed. She sat at her desk one afternoon, listening to the pitter-patter of rain on the roof. No water leaked into the classroom, except for the few drops that came from her eyes.
"Onions! Hot, sweet onions!" Sam called out on the street.
She ran to him. She wanted to throw her arms around him, but couldn't bring herself to do it. Instead, she hugged Mary Lou's neck.
"Is something wrong?"
he asked her. "Oh, Sam," she said, "my heart is breaking."
"I can fix that,"
said Sam. She turned to him. He took hold of both of her hands and kissed her. Because of the rain, there was nobody else out on the street. Even if there was, Catherine and Sam wouldn't have noticed. They were lost in their own world. At that moment, however, Hattie Parker stepped out of the general store. They didn't see her, but she saw them. She pointed her quivering finger in their direction and whispered,
"God will punish you."
Chapter 26. There were no telephones, but word spread quickly through the small town. By the end of the day, everyone in Green Lake had heard that the schoolteacher had kissed the onion picker. Not one child showed up for school the next morning. Miss Catherine sat alone in the classroom and wondered if she had lost track of the day of the week. Perhaps it was Saturday. It wouldn't have surprised her. Her brain and heart had been spinning ever since Sam kissed her. She heard a noise outside the door. Then suddenly a mob of men and women came storming into the school building. They were led by Trout Walker.
"There she is," Trout shouted. "The devil woman."
The mob was turning over desks and ripping down bulletin boards.
"She's been poisoning your children's brains with books," Trout declared.
They began piling all the books in the center of the room.
"Think about what you're doing," cried Miss Catherine.
Someone made a grab for her, tearing her dress, but she managed to get out of the building. She ran to the sheriff's office. The sheriff had his feet up on his desk and was drinking from a bottle of whiskey.
"Morning, Miss Catherine," he said.
"They're destroying the schoolhouse," she said, gasping for breath. "They'll burn it to the ground if someone doesn't stop them."
"Just calm your pretty self down a second," the sheriff said in a slow drawl, "and tell me what you're talking about."
He got up from his desk and walked over to her.
"Trout Walker has..."
"Nah, don't go saying nothing bad about Charles Walker," said the sheriff.
"We don't have much time," urged Catherine. "You've got to stop them."
"You're sure pretty," said the sheriff.
Miss Catherine stared at him in horror.
"Kiss me,"
said the sheriff. She slapped him across the face. He laughed.
"You kissed the onion picker. Why won't you kiss me?"
She tried to slap him again, but he caught her by the hand. She tried to wriggle free.
"You're drunk," she yelled.
"I always get drunk before hanging."
"A hanging? Who?"
"It's against the law for a Negro to kiss a white woman."
"Well, then you'll have to hang me, too," said Catherine, "'cause I kissed him back."
"It ain't against the law for you to kiss him," the sheriff explained. "Just for him to kiss you."
"We're all equal under the eyes of God," she declared.
The sheriff laughed.
"And if Sam and I are equal, why won't you kiss me?"
He laughed again.
"I'll make you a deal. One sweet kiss, and I won't hang your boyfriend. I'll just run him out of town."
Miss Catherine jerked her hand free. As she hurried to the door, she heard the sheriff say,
"The law will punish Sam, and God will punish you."
She stepped back into the street and saw smoke rising from the schoolhouse. She ran down to the lakefront where Sam was hitching Mary Lou to the onion cart.
"Thank God I found you," she sighed, hugging him. "We've got to get out of here now."
"What?"
"Someone must have seen us kissing yesterday," she said. "They set fire to the schoolhouse. The sheriff said he's going to hang you."
Sam hesitated for a moment, as if he couldn't quite believe it. He didn't want to believe it.
"Come on, Mary Lou."
"We have to leave Mary Lou behind," said Catherine.
Sam stared at her a moment. There were tears in his eyes.
"Okay."
Sam's boat was in the water, tied to a tree by a long rope. He untied it, and they waded through the water and climbed aboard. His powerful arms rowed them away from the shore. But his powerful arms were no match for Trout Walker's motorized boat. They were little more than halfway across the lake when Miss Catherine heard the loud roar of the engine. Then she saw the ugly black smoke. These are the facts. The Walker boat smashed into Sam's boat. Sam was shot and killed in the water. Catherine Barlow was rescued against her wishes. When they returned to the shore, she saw Mary Lou's body lying on the ground. The donkey had been shot in the head. That all happened 110 years ago. Since then, not one drop of rain has fallen on Green Lake. You make the decision. Whom did God punish? 3 days after Sam's death, Miss Catherine shot the sheriff while he was sitting in his chair drinking a cup of coffee. Then she carefully applied a fresh coat of red lipstick
and gave him the kiss he had asked for. For the next 20 years, kissing Kate Barlow was one of the most feared outlaws in all the West. Chapter 27. Stanley dug his shovel into the ground. His hole was about 3.5 feet deep in the center. He grunted as he pried up some dirt, then flung it off to the side. The sun was almost directly overhead. He glanced at his canteen lying beside his hole. He knew it was half full, but he didn't take a drink just yet. He had to drink sparingly, because he didn't know who would be driving the water truck the next time it came. 3 days had passed since the warden had scratched Mr. Sir. Every time Mr. Sir delivered water, he poured Stanley straight onto the ground. Fortunately, Mr. Pendansky delivered the water more often than Mr. Sir. Mr. Pendansky was obviously aware of what Mr. Sir was doing, because he always gave Stanley a little extra. He'd fill Stanley's canteen, then let Stanley take a long drink, then top it off for him. It helped, too, that Zero was digging some of Stanley's hole for him, although, as Stanley had expected, the other boys didn't like to see Stanley sitting around while they were working. They'd say things like, "Who died and made you king?" or, "It must be nice to have your own personal slave." When he tried pointing out that he was the one who took the blame for the sunflower seeds, the other boys said it was his fault because he was the one who spilled them. "I risked my life for those seeds," Magnet had said, "and all I got was one lousy handful." Stanley had also tried to explain that he needed to save his energy so he could teach Zero how to read, but the other boys just mocked him. "Same old story, ain't it, Armpit?" X-Ray had said. "The white boy sits around, while the black boy does all the work. Ain't that right, caveman?"
"No, that's not right," Stanley replied.
"No, it ain't," X-Ray agreed. "It ain't right at all." Stanley dug out another shovel full of dirt. He knew X-Ray wouldn't have been talking like that if he was the one teaching Zero to read. Then X-Ray would be talking about how important it was that he got his rest, right? So he could be a better teacher, right? And that was true. He did need to save his strength so he could be a better teacher, although Zero was a quick learner. Sometimes, in fact, Stanley hoped the warden was watching them, with her secret cameras and microphones, so she'd know that Zero wasn't as stupid as everyone thought. From across the lake, he could see the approaching dust cloud. He took a drink from his canteen, then waited to see who was driving the truck. The swelling on Mr. Sir's face had gone down, but it was still a little puffy. There had been 3 scratch marks down his cheek. 2 of the marks had faded, but the middle scratch must have been the deepest, because it still remained. It was a jagged purple line running from below his eye to below his mouth, like a tattoo of a scar. Stanley waited in line, then handed him his canteen. Mr. Sir held it up to his ear and shook it. He smiled at the swishing sound. Stanley hoped he wouldn't dump it out. To his surprise, Mr. Sir held the canteen under the stream of water and filled it.
"Wait here," he said.
Still holding Stanley's canteen, Mr. Sir walked past him, then went around the side of the truck and into the cab, where he couldn't be seen.
"What's he doing in there?" asked Zero.
"I wish I knew," said Stanley. A short while later, Mr. Sir came out of the truck and handed Stanley his canteen. It was still full.
"Thank you, Mr. Sir."
Mr. Sir smiled at him.
"What are you waiting for?" he asked. "Drink up."
He popped some sunflower seeds into his mouth, chewed, and spit out the shells. Stanley was afraid to drink it. He hated to think what kind of vile substance Mr. Sir might have put in it. He brought the canteen back to his hole. For a long time, he left it beside his hole as he continued to dig. Then, when he was so thirsty that he couldn't hardly stand it anymore, he unscrewed the cap, turned the canteen over, and poured it all out onto the dirt. He was afraid that if he'd waited another second, he might have taken a drink. After Stanley taught Zero the final 6 letters of the alphabet, he taught him to write his name. Capital Z-E-R-O. Zero wrote the letters as Stanley said them.
"Zero,"
he said, looking at his piece of paper. His smile was too big for his face. Stanley watched him write it over and over again. "Zero, zero, 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 zero." In a way, it made him sad. He couldn't help but think that 100 times 0 was still nothing.
"You know, that's not my real name,"
Zero said as they headed to the rec room for dinner.
"Well, yeah," Stanley said. "I guess I knew that." He had never really been sure. Everyone's always called me Zero, even before I came here. Oh, okay. My real name's Hector.
Hector?
Stanley repeated. Hector Zeroni.
Chapter 28. After 20 years, Kate Barlow returned to Green Lake. It was a place where nobody would ever find her. A ghost town on a ghost lake. The peach trees had all died, but there were a couple of small oak trees still growing by an old abandoned cabin. The cabin used to be on the eastern shore of the lake. Now the edge of the lake was over 5 miles away, and it was little more than a small pond full of dirty water. She lived in the cabin. Sometimes she could hear Sam's voice echoing across the emptiness.
Onions! Sweet fresh onions!
She knew she was crazy. She knew she'd been crazy for the last 20 years.
Oh, Sam, she would say, speaking into the vast emptiness. I know it is hot, but I feel so very cold. My hands are cold. My feet are cold. My face is cold. My heart is cold.
And sometimes she would hear him say, I can fix that. And she'd feel his warm arm across her shoulders. She'd been living in the cabin about 3 months when she was awakened one morning by someone kicking open the cabin door. She opened her eyes to see the blurry end of a rifle 2 inches from her nose. She could smell Trout Walker's dirty feet.
You've got exactly 10 seconds to tell me where you've hidden your loot, said Trout, or else I'll blow your head off.
She yawned. A red-headed woman was there with Trout. Kate could see her rummaging through the cabin, dumping drawers and knocking things from the shelves of cabinets. The woman came to her.
Where is it?
She demanded.
Linda Miller? Asked Kate. Is that you?
Linda Miller had been in the 4th grade when Kate Barlow was still a teacher. She had been a cute, freckle-faced girl with beautiful red hair. Now her face was blotchy, and her hair was dirty and scraggly.
It's Linda Walker, now, said Trout.
Oh, Linda, I'm so sorry, said Kate.
Trout jabbed her throat with the rifle.
Where's the loot?
There is no loot, said Kate.
Don't give me that, shouted Trout. You've robbed every bank from here to Houston. You better tell him, said Linda. We're desperate.
You married him for his money, didn't you? Asked Kate.
Linda nodded.
But it's all gone. Dried up with the lake. The peach trees, the livestock. I kept thinking, it has to rain soon. The drought can't last forever. But it just kept getting hotter and hotter and hotter.
Her eyes fixed on the shovel which was leaning up against the fireplace.
She's buried it, she declared.
I don't know what you're talking about, said Kate.
There was a loud blast as Trout fired his rifle just above her head. The window behind her shattered.
Where's it buried? He demanded.
Go ahead, kill me, Trout, said Kate. But I sure hope you like to dig, 'cause you're gonna be digging for a long time. It's a big, vast wasteland out there. You, your children, and their children can dig for the next 100 years, and you'll never find it.
Linda grabbed Kate's hair and jerked her head back.
Oh, we're not gonna kill you, she said. But by the time we're finished with you, you're gonna wish you were dead.
I've been wishing I was dead for the last 20 years, said Kate.
They dragged her out of bed and pushed her outside. She wore blue silk pajamas. Her turquoise-studded black boots remained beside her bed. They loosely tied her legs together so she could walk, but she couldn't run. They made her walk barefoot on the hot ground. They wouldn't let her stop walking.
Not till you take us to the loot, said Trout.
Linda hit Kate on the back of the legs with the shovel.
You're gonna take us to it sooner or later, so you might as well make it sooner.
She walked one way, then the other, until her feet were black and blistered. Whenever she stopped, Linda whacked her with the shovel.
I'm losing my patience, warned Trout.
She felt the shovel jab into her back, and she fell onto the hard dirt.
Get up, ordered Linda.
Kate struggled to her feet.
We're being easy on you today, said Trout. It's just gonna keep getting worse and worse for you until you take us to it. Look out, shouted Linda.
A lizard leaped toward them. Kate could see its big red eyes. Linda tried to hit it with the shovel, and Trout shot at it, but they both missed. The lizard landed on Kate's bare ankle. Its sharp black teeth bit into her leg. Its white tongue lapped up the droplets of blood that leaked out of the wound. Kate smiled. There was nothing they could do to her anymore.
"Start digging," she said.
"Where is it?"
Linda screeched.
"Where'd you bury it?"
Trout demanded. Kate Barlow died laughing. Part 2. The Last Hole. Chapter 29. There was a change in the weather, for the worse. The air became unbearably humid. Stanley was drenched in sweat. Beads of moisture ran down the handle of his shovel. It was almost as if the temperatures had gotten so hot that the air itself was sweating. A loud boom of thunder echoed across the empty lake. A storm was way off to the west, beyond the mountains. Stanley could count more than 30 seconds between the flash of lightning and the clap of thunder. That was how far away the storm was. Sound travels a great distance across a barren wasteland. Usually, Stanley couldn't see the mountains at this time of day. The only time they were visible was just at sunup, before the air became hazy. Now, however, the sky was very dark off to the west, and every time the lightning flashed, the dark shape of the mountains would briefly appear.
"Come on, rain," shouted Armpit. "Blow this away."
"Maybe it'll rain so hard it'll fill up the whole lake," said Squid. "We can go swimming."
40 days and 40 nights, said X-Ray. "Guess we'd better start building us an ark. Get 2 of each animal, right?"
"Right," said Zigzag. 2 rattlesnakes, 2 scorpions, 2 yellow-spotted lizards."
The humidity, or maybe the electricity in the air, had made Zigzag's head even more wild-looking. His frizzy blonde hair stuck almost straight out. The horizon lit up with a huge web of lightning. In that split second, Stanley thought he saw an unusual rock formation on top of one of the mountain peaks. The peak looked to him exactly like a giant fist, with the thumb sticking straight up. Then it was gone, and Stanley wasn't sure whether he'd seen it or not. "I found refuge on God's thumb." That was what his great-grandfather had supposedly said after Kate Barlow had robbed him and left him stranded in the desert. No one ever knew what he meant by that. He was delirious when he said it. But how could he live for 3 weeks without food or water? Stanley had asked his father.
"I don't know. I wasn't there," replied his father. "I wasn't born yet. My father wasn't born yet. My grandmother, your great-grandmother, was a nurse in the hospital where they treated him. He always talked about how she'd dab his forehead with a cool, wet cloth. He said that's why he fell in love with her. He thought she was an angel."
"A real angel?" His father didn't know. What about after he got better? Did he ever say what he meant by God's thumb, or how he survived?
"No. He just blamed his no-good, pig-stealing father."
The storm moved off farther west, along with any hope of rain, but the image of the fist and thumb remained in Stanley's head. Although, instead of lightning flashing behind the thumb, in Stanley's mind, the lightning was coming out of the thumb, as if it were the thumb of God. Chapter 30. The next day was Zigzag's birthday, or so he said. Zigzag lay in his cot as everyone headed outside.
"I get to sleep in because it's my birthday."
Then a little while later, he cut into the breakfast line, just in front of Squid. Squid told him to go to the end of the line.
"Hey, it's my birthday," Zigzag said, staying where he was.
"It's not your birthday," said Magnet, who was standing behind Squid.
"Is too," said Zigzag. "July 8th.
Stanley was behind Magnet. He didn't know what day of the week it was, let alone the date. It could have been July 8th, but how would Zigzag know? He tried to figure out how long he'd been at Camp Green Lake, if indeed it was July 8th.
"I came here on May 24th, he said aloud. "So that means I've been here
46 days, said Zero.
Stanley was still trying to remember how many days there were in May and June. He looked at Zero. He'd learned not to doubt him when it came to math.
46 days. It felt more like 1,000.
He didn't dig a hole that first day, and he hadn't dug one yet today. That meant he'd dug 44 holes, if it really was July 8th.
"Can I have an extra carton of juice?" Zigzag asked Mr. Sir. "It's my birthday."
To everyone's surprise, Mr. Sir gave it to him. Stanley dug his shovel into the dirt. Hole number 45.
"The 45th hole is the hardest," he said to himself.
But that really wasn't true, and he knew it. He was a lot stronger than when he first arrived. His body had adjusted somewhat to the heat and harsh conditions. Mr. Sir was no longer depriving him of water.
After having to get by on less water for a week or so, Stanley now felt like he had all the water he could want. Of course, it helped that Zero dug some of his hole for him each day, but that wasn't as great as everyone thought it was. He always felt awkward while Zero was digging his hole, unsure of what to do with himself. Usually he stood around a while before sitting off by himself on the hard ground, with the sun beating down on him. It was better than digging, but not a lot better. When the sun came up a couple of hours later, Stanley looked for the thumb of God. The mountains were little more than dark shadows on the horizon. He thought he could make out a spot where the top of one mountain seemed to jut upward, but it didn't seem very impressive. A short time later, the mountains were no longer visible, hidden behind the glare of the sun, reflecting off the dirty air. It was possible, he realized, that he was somewhere near where Kate Barlow had robbed his great-grandfather. If that was really her lipstick tube he'd found, then she must have lived somewhere around here. Zero took his turn before the lunch break. Stanley climbed out of his hole, and Zero climbed down into it.
"Hey, caveman," said Zigzag. "You should get a whip. Then if your slave doesn't dig fast enough, you can crack it across his back."
"He's not my slave," said Stanley. "We have a deal, that's all."
"A good deal for you," said Zigzag.
"It was Zero's idea, not mine." "Don't you know, Zig?" said X-Ray, coming over. "Caveman's doing Zero a big favor. Zero likes to dig holes."
"He sure is a nice guy to let Zero dig his hole for him," said Squid.
"Well, what about me?" asked Armpit. "I like to dig holes, too. Can I dig for you, caveman, after Zero's finished?"
The other boys laughed.
"No, I want to," said Zigzag. "It's my birthday."
Stanley tried his best to ignore them. Zigzag kept at it.
"Come on, caveman. Be a pal. Let me dig your hole."
Stanley smiled as if it were all a big joke. When Mr. Pandansky arrived with water and lunch, Zigzag offered Stanley his place in line.
"Since you're so much better than me..."
Stanley remained where he was.
"I didn't say I was bet..."
"You're insulting him, Zig," said X-Ray. "Why should Caveman take your place when he deserves to be at the very front? He's better than all of us, aren't you, Caveman?"
"No," said Stanley.
"Sure you are," said X-Ray. "Now come to the front of the line where you belong." "That's okay," said Stanley.
"No, it's not okay," said X-Ray. "Get up here."
Stanley hesitated, then moved to the front of the line.
"Well, this is a first,"
Mr. Pandansky said, coming around the side of the truck. He filled Stanley's canteen and handed him a sack lunch. Stanley was glad to get away. He sat down between his hole and Zero's. He was glad that he'd be digging his own hole for the rest of the day. Maybe the other boys would leave him alone. Maybe he shouldn't let Zero dig his hole for him anymore. But he needed to save his energy to be a good teacher. He bit into a sandwich, which contained some kind of meat and cheese mixture that came in a can. Just about everything at Green Lake came in a can. The supply truck came once a month. He glanced up to see Zigzag and Squid walking toward him.
"I'll give you my cookie if you let me dig your hole," said Zigzag.
Squid laughed.
"Here, take my cookie," said Zigzag, holding it out for him.
"No thanks," said Stanley.
"Come on, take my cookie,"
said Zigzag, sticking it in his face.
"Leave me alone," said Stanley. "Please eat my cookie," said Zigzag, holding it under Stanley's nose.
Squid laughed. Stanley pushed it away. Zigzag pushed him back.
"Don't push me."
"I didn't." Stanley got to his feet. He looked around. Mr. Pandansky was filling Zero's canteen. Zigzag pushed him again.
"I said, don't push me."
Stanley took a step backward, carefully avoiding Zero's hole. Zigzag kept after him. He shoved Stanley and said,
"Quit pushing."
"Lay off," said Armpit, as he, Magnet, and X-Ray joined them.
"Why should he?" snapped X-Ray. "Caveman's bigger. He can take care of himself."
"I don't want any trouble," Stanley said. Zigzag pushed him hard.
"Eat my cookie," he said.
Stanley was glad to see Mr. Pandansky coming toward them, along with Zero.
"Hi, Mom," said Armpit. "We're just fooling around." "I saw what was going on," Mr. Pandansky said.
He turned to Stanley.
"Go ahead, Stanley," he said. "Hit him back. You're bigger."
Stanley stared at Mr. Pandansky in astonishment.
"Teach the bully a lesson," said Mr. Pandansky.
Zigzag hit Stanley on the shoulder with his open hand.
"Teach me a lesson," he challenged.
Stanley made a feeble attempt to punch Zigzag. Then he felt a flurry of fists against his head and neck. Zigzag had hold of his collar with one hand and was hitting him with the other. The collar ripped and Stanley fell backward onto the dirt.
"That's enough," Mr. Pandansky yelled.
It wasn't enough for Zigzag. He jumped on top of Stanley. "Stop!" shouted Mr. Pandaski. The side of Stanley's face was pressed flat against the dirt. He tried to protect himself, but Zigzag's fist slammed off his arms and pounded his face into the ground. All he could do was wait for it to be over. Then, suddenly, Zigzag was off of him. Stanley managed to look up, and he saw that Zero had his arm around Zigzag's long neck. Zigzag made a gagging sound as he desperately tried to pry Zero's arm off of him.
"You're gonna kill him!" shouted Mr. Pandaski.
Zero kept squeezing. Armpit charged into them, freeing Zigzag from Zero's chokehold. The three boys fell to the ground in different directions. Mr. Pandaski fired his pistol into the air. The other counselors came running from the office, the tents, or out on the lake. They had their guns drawn, but holstered them when they saw the trouble was over. The warden walked over from her cabin.
"There was a riot," Mr. Pandaski told her. "Zero almost strangled Ricky."
The warden looked at Zigzag, who was still stretching and massaging his neck. Then she turned her attention to Stanley, who was obviously in the worst condition.
"What happened to you?"
"Nothing. It wasn't a riot."
"Ziggy was beating up the caveman," said Armpit. "Then Zero started choking Zigzag, and I had to pull Zero off of Zigzag. It was all over before Mom fired his gun."
"They just got a little hot, that's all," said X-Ray. "You know how it is. In the sun all day. People get high, right? But everything's cool now."
"I see," the warden said. She turned to Zigzag.
"What's the matter? Didn't you get a puppy for your birthday?" "Zig's just a little hot," said X-Ray. "Out in the sun all day. You know how it is. The blood starts to boil."
"Is that what happened, Zigzag?" asked the warden.
"Yeah," said Zigzag. "Like X-Ray said, you're working so hard in the hot sun while Caveman just sits around doing nothing. My blood boiled."
"Excuse me," said the warden. "Caveman digs his holes just like everyone else." Zigzag shrugged.
"Sometimes."
"Excuse me?"
"Zero's been digging part of Caveman's hole every day," said Squid.
The warden looked from Squid to Stanley to Zero.
"I'm teaching him to read and write," said Stanley. "It's sort of a trade. The hole still gets dug, so what does it matter who digs it?"
"Excuse me," said the warden.
"Isn't it more important for him to learn to read?" Stanley asked. "Doesn't that build character more than digging holes?"
"That's his character," said the warden.
"What about your character?"
Stanley raised and lowered one shoulder. The warden turned to Zero.
"Well, Zero, what have you learned so far?"
Zero said nothing.
"Have you just been digging Caveman's hole for nothing?" the warden asked him.
"He likes to dig holes," said Mr. Pandaski.
"Tell me what you learned yesterday," said the warden. "Surely you can remember that."
Zero said nothing. Mr. Pandaski laughed. He picked up a shovel and said,
"You might as well try to teach the shovel to read. It's got more brains than Zero."
"The at sound," said Zero.
"The at sound?" repeated the warden. "Well then, tell me, what does C-A-T spell?"
Zero glanced around uneasily. Stanley knew he knew the answer. Zero just didn't like answering questions.
"Cat," Zero said.
Mr. Pandaski clapped his hands.
"Bravo, bravo! The boy's a genius."
"F-A-T?" asked the warden.
Zero thought a moment. Stanley hadn't taught him the F sound yet.
"F,"
Zero whispered.
"F, at,
fat."
"How about H-A-T?" asked the warden.
Stanley hadn't taught him the H sound either. Zero concentrated hard, then said,
"Chat."
All the counselors laughed.
"He's a genius, all right," said Mr. Pandaski. "He's so stupid, he doesn't even know he's stupid."
Stanley didn't know why Mr. Pandaski seemed to have it in for Zero. If Mr. Pandaski only thought about it, he'd realize it was very logical for Zero to think that the letter H made the ch sound.
"Okay. From now on, I don't want anyone digging anyone else's hole," said the warden. "And no more reading lessons."
"I'm not digging another hole," said Zero.
"Good," said the warden. She turned to Stanley. "You know why you're digging holes?" "Because it's good for you. It teaches you a lesson. If Zero digs your hole for you, then you're not learning your lesson, are you?"
"I guess not," Stanley mumbled, although he knew they weren't digging just to learn a lesson. She was looking for something, something that belonged to Kissing Kate Barlow.
"Why can't I dig my own hole, but still teach Zero to read?" he asked. "What's wrong with that?"
"I'll tell you what's wrong with that," the warden said. "It leads to trouble.
Zero almost killed Zigzag.
It causes him stress, said Mr. Pendansky. I know you mean well, Stanley, but face it, Zero's too stupid to learn to read. That's what makes his blood boil, not the hot sun.
I'm not digging another hole, said Zero.
Mr. Pendansky handed him the shovel.
Here, take it, Zero. It's all you'll ever be good for.
Zero took the shovel. Then he swung it like a baseball bat. The metal blade smashed across Mr. Pendansky's face. His knees crumpled beneath him. He was unconscious before he hit the ground. The counselors all drew their guns. Zero held the shovel out in front of him, as if he were going to try to bat away the bullets.
I hate digging holes, he said. Then he slowly backed away.
Don't shoot him, said the warden. He can't go anywhere. The last thing we need is an investigation. Zero kept backing up, out past the cluster of holes the boys had been digging, then farther and farther out onto the lake. He's going to have to come back for water, the warden said. Stanley noticed Zero's canteen lying on the ground near his hole. A couple of the counselors helped Mr. Pendansky to his feet and into the truck. Stanley looked out toward Zero, but he had disappeared into the haze. The warden ordered the counselors to take turns guarding the shower room and rec room all day and all night. They were not to let Zero drink any water. When he returned, he was to be brought directly to her. She examined her fingernails and said, "It's almost time for me to paint my nails again." Before she left, she told the six remaining members of Group D that she still expected seven holes. Chapter 31. Stanley angrily dug his shovel into the dirt. He was angry at everyone. Mr. Pendansky, the warden, Zigzag, X-Ray, and his no-good, dirty, rotten, pig-stealing great-great-grandfather. But mostly, he was angry at himself. He knew he never should have let Zero dig part of his hole for him. He still could have taught him to read. If Zero could dig all day and still have the strength to learn, then he should have been able to dig all day and still have the strength to teach. What he should do, he thought, was go out after Zero, but he didn't. None of the others helped him dig Zero's hole, and he didn't expect them to. Zero had been helping him dig his hole. Now he had to dig Zero's. He remained out on the lake, digging during the hottest part of the day, long after everyone else had gone in. He kept an eye out for Zero, but Zero didn't come back. It would have been easy to go out after Zero. There was nobody to stop him. He kept thinking that's what he should do. Maybe they could climb to the top of Big Thumb, if it wasn't too far away, and if it really was the same place where his great-grandfather found refuge, and if, after 100 years or so, water was still there. It didn't seem likely. Not when an entire lake had gone dry. And even if they did find refuge on Big Thumb, he thought, they'd still have to come back here, eventually. Then they'd both have to face the warden and her rattlesnake fingers. Instead, he came up with a better idea, although he didn't have it quite all figured out yet. He thought that maybe he could make a deal with the warden. He'd tell her where he really found the gold tube if she wouldn't scratch Zero. He wasn't sure how he'd make this deal without getting himself in deeper trouble. She might just say, "Tell me where you found it, or I'll scratch you, too." Plus, it would mean X-Ray would get in trouble, too. She'd probably scratch him up as well. X-Ray would be out to get him for the next 16 months. He dug his shovel into the dirt. By the next morning, Zero still hadn't returned. Stanley saw one of the counselors sitting guard by the water spigot outside the shower wall. Mr. Pendansky had two black eyes and a bandage over his nose.
"I always knew he was stupid," Stanley heard him say.
Stanley was required to dig only one hole the next day. As he dug, he kept a constant watch out for Zero, but never saw him. Once again, he considered going out on the lake to look for him, but he began to realize that it was already too late. His only hope was that Zero had found God's thumb on his